Hi, my name is Matt. I'm a young guy with a big mouth. That's about it.
Trigger warning, this episode speaks in detail about attempted suicide. Listener discretion is advised. At 16, in an attempt to end his life, Matt jumped 7 stories from a building. He survived. He sustained a spinal cord injury, and it began a journey that would literally change his whole life.
Now, I wouldn't say suicide's a good thing by any means, but it's the best thing that ever happened to me. And I wouldn't change anything in my past.
Yeah, okay, that's a really... That is quite a bold statement, isn't it? What was the first thing you thought of when you... Well, did you pass out and then wake up in a hospital?
I mean, I jumped 7 stories. So I hit the floor. I was knocked out, found, I don't know, 8 hours later, something like that. And I was in a coma for 2 weeks.
Right.
And I remember waking up. It was a painful experience to wake up. You feel like, you know... Well, you think you've ended your own life, and it's funny because you think it's an afterlife initially. It's like, what is going on or whatever? And I don't know, the reality sets in where you don't feel half your body. Not only don't you feel half your body, but you can't function or feel anything below your rib cage. I mean, all the casts, boots, neck braces, all that going on as well. I mean, if I felt like I was worthless and pathetic beforehand, what am I now? And I was at a tricky age, 16, right? It's you're still figuring out who you are. And you're trying to find answers to things. And I was always someone who asked big questions.
Yeah. So you've woken up. You can't really, one, fathom that you're even alive. And then you kind of are coming to terms with additional things that have happened to you. But you did say that it was... the best thing that has happened to you. Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, don't get me wrong. Initially, it wasn't like it was the best thing, right?
Yeah, no, we need to clarify that now. That absolutely should come with a trigger warning. The circumstances surrounding your SCI is different from a lot of the stories that we talk about on the podcast, but yours was quite purposeful. And
well, it was intentional, definitely. It was
very, very intentional. So there's a lot of things that obviously you had to now come to terms with. But let's talk about the journey to getting to the stage where you're like, this is, you know, my life is turned around, basically. I guess, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it was quite like a journey, right? As I mentioned, not initially. Initially, it was the worst day of my life. 4 months into hospital, so a week before I left, I was with my mum. We caught a train. And on the train trip back from Penrith to Royal North Shore, halfway through the trip, this guy comes on the train. Complete stranger, complete bogan, right? And he comes on, and before he even sits down, he looks at me. He's like, what did you do to yourself? In this real loud, abrupt voice. I never told anyone the truth. I was always shameful, right? I always said I had an accident, had a fall. But for the first time after my injury, I said I attempted suicide. And he laughed and said, I was pretty fucking stupid. Look at you now. And then he sits across from me.
Yeah.
And he asks me, what are you going to do about it now? And that was a question I don't think I was ready for at the time.
Right.
But it stayed in my mind for so long afterwards. And that question, what are you going to do about it now? I mean, is that not like the most Aussie thing to say, right? Right now, do you want to, I don't know, work towards your goals? Right now, do you want to stay inside? And that's okay. Either one's okay, but... what are you going to do about it now? It's your choice. And anyways, after opening up to that guy on the train, that was a catalyst for me to actually get some support in my life. For the first time, I was someone who didn't like sharing. I was seriously insecure, seriously shy. But for the first time, I actually had support in my life. I was offered to share my story. And the first time I did it, again, never liked speaking. But these young people came up to me afterwards and they said, Matt, inspired me. Matt, I want to help my friends after hearing you speak. And I was like, wait. For the last 5 years, I've been believing I'm worthless. For the first time, I'm having a thought of, wait, no, maybe I am maybe worth something. Maybe worthless can turn to worthiness. I don't know. I started to see this injury not as all bad. And that really started to shift things, not in the snap of a finger, but gradually over time. The more I share my story, I realized I wanted to do more. Because what it was really about wasn't my story. It was about influencing meaningful change in other people's lives. And so I started, you know, running workshops, whether it was in high schools, corporate world, conferences, communities, whatever. And the more I worked towards my purpose, the less and less and less the depression existed for me. You know, I was someone who did my absolute best at hiding my emotions, whether it be through my body or through by smiling for other people. I was real, real hardworking. And I was decently strong, you know, I was disciplined, responsible, all those things. I now directed from my insecurity now towards something that's purposeful.
Let's backtrack a little bit. When you came out of, or when you were in rehabilitation, you're 16 at the time. Did you go back to school?
That was a tricky time period too.
I was going to ask, when you're having, you know, when people finally, I don't know, when you reveal your story, how do you turn that around for people to be like, don't focus on all of that? Because you're still going through a time where you're still trying to come to terms with whatever's going on at the same time as well.
So at 16.
Yeah, at 16. And then you have all these high school students that are like, how do we act in front of Matt now?
It was tricky, right? Because I was the first, I mean, like, I never saw anyone at my high school in a wheelchair. And no one had, in my grade, seen a kid at school in a wheelchair too. So it was a little bit different and a lot of different responses. I mean, I'm really blessed. I had a lot of great friends. And like, while I was in rehab, they organized a day, complete surprise, my first home visit. They surprised me with like 30 or so friends at a local shopping center. But when I went back to school, it was really tricky where I'm now around everyone. And like, and just even in my own headspace, right? I remember going to my first homeroom class and everyone else is in their own chairs, but I'm in this wheelchair. Just seeing that, like, it set off a lot of like bad thoughts for me. And then I remember leaving homeroom, there was this one guy who was in the grade above me who I had a little bit of beef with pre-injury. And I knew he didn't like me. And he's like, oh, what did you do to yourself now? Yeah. And so that was, you know, so I was still coming to terms with it all. There was this one kid in year seven. His name was Jesse. I'll never forget this guy. I mean, from the moment he met me, he was always just like, he's always stood by my side. He always wanted to talk, wanted to engage more and more and more. And I always had my mates as well. For me, it was really about keeping supportive people around. And if I didn't have that, navigating it would have been so tough.
You had an incredibly supportive network of people.
I'd love to also just mention very briefly, I had a lot of support around me, but my headspace didn't see any of it. Yeah. And it was such a big help that they were willing to support me, even though I didn't want to be supported. Mm. And that's such a big point. School and all that stuff, teachers, they didn't know how to support me best, but they did, how do I say it? They did their best with what they knew. Don't get me wrong, at times it kind of pissed me off. I mean, I wanted to study all 12 subjects. I wanted to finish my HSC, but I only ended up doing 5 units. They wouldn't let me because I missed 6 months of year 11. I only had one term left to catch up on 3 terms worth of stuff. Plus, they said, Matt, you've got a brain injury. You're not going to be able to do X, Y, Z. But yeah, no, like at school, like, looking back on it, they were very supportive. So like, they gave me a tutor. I had a lot of special provisions that at the time I think I actually needed. All of them, not necessarily, but quite a lot of them I did. And I ended up doing well at school, thankfully, as a result.
After during year 12 and after you finish your HSC, pre-attempt, what sort of job did you ever think you would get into, or what sort of career you thought you were going to take versus, oh, did you even think about that at all? I mean, you know, there are people out there who are like, I've already mapped out my life. You talked about the turning point of the man asking you what you're going to do with yourself. What were you going to do with yourself? I mean, you did some public speaking, but like, did you think about anything other than that?
I was never a speaker.
Yeah.
I was.
Oh, actually, yeah, let's talk about that. So, because we mentioned it back in the coffee shop about, you know, I think I asked you whether or not you were comfortable with public speaking even beforehand, and you were like, nah, not at all, nah. Talk about that.
Given this, the insecurities and all that stuff, I was never comfortable quote-unquote exposing myself, being or showing who I truly am. And so speaking was something I was never confident with. I never liked confrontation, all those things. And so I was always shy, introverted to myself.
So then you've done your first speaking gig. Someone's come up to you and said, you've made me rethink, or you've made me think about things. Then the journey that you went on to get to the stage where you are now, where you seem pretty positive. I mean, even on the phone when I was speaking to you, you were like so happy. I was not used to that level of positivity because of maybe my own. where do you see yourself going now? Like, who are you now? How do you reflect on those? I don't know. I guess you're 25 now, aren't you? 23. Okay, shit. You know, if we're going to talk about 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, how do you reflect back on the last 7 years, 6 years, and then who's the person you are now and who do you want to be in the future?
I think it goes back to that guy on the train. It was such a big turning point for me. What are you going to do about it now? The way I interpret that is, okay, every moment's a new opportunity to grow. What are you going to work towards? Where are you headed? And what's next for you? This is where you're at. You can't change our circumstances. This is where we're at. Okay, but we can change our outcomes. We dictate them. That's our decision. Speaking has been a major focus for me. Thankfully, I've been able to bring it to the place I'm at now. Working towards goals of mine and even the things that were told, you know, to me that were impossible and all this and that. I don't like that word at all. My family would say stubborn, but I like to call myself passionate, right? If I set my mind to something, I work towards it.
You do corporate things, you do school-related stuff. Which one do you actually find to be the most meaningful to talk at?
They're both equal, if I'm honest. The thing is, right, I really resonate with the young people in the high schools because I was there. These young people, like, I can tell they're absorbing it. And in the corporate world, they're the parents that are asking, how can I prevent my son, my daughter from going down the similar path? That's the exact same thing. And well, then they're also worried about themselves, how they can support themselves, support their colleagues, navigate their own headspace so that they can perform better, but also be more for those that they love. They're both equally meaningful to me. Obviously, it's a different approach, but it's something that I'm blessed to be able to do.
So when we talk about self-esteem, right, and this is something that I have discussed with quite a lot of people in this podcast, and we talk about self-image, connecting what I believe to be it is a very superficial world, and a lot of it rides on how people are looking and whether or not you've got the right body for it. How do you look your best all the time for other people who may not even ever see you or speak to you or even know who you are, but you're working so hard for this thing. And then part of being part of a body with a disability is that it is most of the time a physically quote-unquote flawed body. A lot of self-image and self-worth really starts to take another twist because you really need to reassess what self-image and self-worth means. In high school, and I think I talked about this in a previous episode, it kind of seems like every single day going to school, because it's such a routine and you're going like 5 days a week, 13 years, you're seeing the same people all the time or slightly different people, and then you have all the same relationship, whether it's a good one, whether it's a bad one. You need to almost act a certain way, look a certain way, because you're seeing the same people over and over and over again. But when you're in a body of somebody who is not able-bodied, it really changes the scope of what it means to have self-value and self-worth.
Before my injury, it was all about my body. And I had a reputation for it. I was the biggest guy in my school, most ripped, all that shit. Pun on the French.
It's okay. This is a safe space to swear.
That was my reputation. So it's all about the external. And when I had gotten my injury, everything changed. Because no longer did I have this muscular physique, but all my muscles had... all melted, and now I'm in a wheelchair. Everything I thought my identity was now gone. The first thing I noticed when I got into the chair was, shit, everyone's looking at me. At least I thought at the time.
They probably were.
And that was, again, an insecurity thing. I didn't like being loud, didn't like being the center of attention.
But it's so weird that you say that as somebody who spent quite a lot of time on their body to then go like, they're all looking at me. Do you know what I mean? Like the juxtaposition of that statement.
I understand what you're saying, yeah. But it was coming from before my injury. It was like people admire me. People wanted to be me.
Oh, okay. Girls, okay, I understand.
Girls liked that, all that thing. Uh-huh, uh-huh. But then afterwards, it's like, I felt they were almost looking down. Mm. And that That used to bother me. Whether they were or not, it's a whole different thing. They're probably just curious. Yeah, I mean, after my injury, I felt like people were just staring at me, and whether they were like looking down on me, judging me, or probably just curious. Mm. I don't know. I just hated it. There was a moment when I started to look at myself differently, and I started to see myself as no different to anyone else. Did I start to feel people weren't looking at me differently? People, they might have a glance or whatever, but I just smile at them. And they'd smile back. Mm. It wasn't like a dirty look or whatever. It was just, it was a real identity shift for me. And a lot happened around that too. That's led to that, that created that. And some hard decisions I made that really turned my life around.
Do you want to talk about it or no?
Are you keen on? I don't mind sharing.
Okay, go on.
I'm not sure if this is the place though.
I don't mind,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
I will talk about whatever you feel like you want to talk about. I will talk about anything.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, do you want to know? Yeah. The biggest turning point. I've had fucking many. Okay. A significant turning point I had.
Let's
see, top five. God. No, but I was at this meditation retreat, and I remember at this meditation retreat, everyone, this is back in 2018, everyone's like, oh, Matt, you're going to be walking out of here, you're going to be running, you're going to be doing this, you're going to be doing that. And in the back of my mind, I just wanted to put my middle finger up at all of them. And then there was one lady who I'll never forget. And she put me aside and she's like, Matt, I've seen everyone put all these things in your head. Matt, what do you want? And that made me tear up, and I was like bawling my eyes out. And I was like, wow. No, I don't want to be sitting in this chair for the rest of my life. I do want to be able to walk again. And whether it was before my injury, no, at my injury, everyone telling me it's impossible, it's never going to happen, it's this, it's that, it's, or people at this retreat saying, oh, you're going to be doing this, you're going to be doing that. For the first time, someone in my life actually said, what do you want, Matt?
So am I to understand that like people would just kind of plant the seed of something in you to try and make you think that that was what you wanted before even considering to ask you at all?
It always felt like people were trying to put their idea of reality onto me. But I remember after that meditation retreat, I got a message from Centrelink saying my payments had been cancelled because the last submission I put through just didn't go through because of the internet or whatever. I rang them back. Then I had this like gut feeling. I was like, what am I doing right now? I've been on hold for 15 minutes waiting to get my disability support pension back. Okay. Firstly, do I want to be a speaker? Is my mission that meaningful to me? And if that's the case, why would I need a plan B, a safety net to fall back onto in case it doesn't work out? And not only that, Matt, do you want to walk again? You said you wanted to. Why are you on the phone right now? I hung up the phone. I haven't called Centrelink back. I haven't been on a pension since. There was one more thing that I had to get rid of, I felt like, and that was my parking permit. And I snapped that up. And since 2018, I have not had a disability support pension or that, yeah, disability parking permit.
So when you say walk again, what does that mean to you? Like, I mean, is it like literally walking independently of your wheelchair forever? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, am I there yet? No. But I'm still progressing. And yeah. I tell you what, there's no coincidence, if you ask me. After I snapped that the parking permit, after I got rid of my pension, all that after the retreat, I started doing rehab a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, this is now coming up 3 years post-injury. I've had barely any muscle function come back, and I had new muscles start firing. New nerve function after being told that after a year is the most you'll ever get back if anything comes back. You've had a complete spinal cord injury, and then having new muscles fire, my rehab progressing to the point where I'm now doing sit to stands every day with my trainers. I'm jumping on the exoskeleton at Raw Rehab regularly and seeing progress in the numbers. Now, all the medical professionals, they can't explain it. They just say, Matt, it's a miracle. And I honestly get pissed off at that. And I have so many friends that, well, people that have said, Matt, you're so lucky that I've gotten all this stuff back. I'm not lucky at all. I made a decision. I decided to go head in on it. I do rehab every single day. And look, is that the case for everyone? No, it's not. But the thing is, despite reality showing me something each and every day, I've accepted it, but I'm like, I can do more, I can be more, I am more. And showing up to every rehab session with that in mind. Now, do I want to show up every day? No, don't get me wrong. I'm far out. Like, there are days I just want to sleep in. I like, it's starting at 6:30. It's not ideal. I mean, I all the training I do, I love more sleep. But this goal is so much, it's so meaningful to me, because when I have kids in the future, which I know I will, they're going to know, not only because of what I say, but because of the person I am, that their dreams are possible, that their goals, they can achieve. Nothing is out of reach, because not only does Dad say that, but Dad is that.
I don't know about you, but it's just getting progressively louder in these earphones.
It is, it is.
Okay, so you're 23 now. Is there something that you're like, I'm still trying to work through it, but I know that I'm going to get there eventually, just might take time? Now, we did talk about the walking, that maybe that's it, but is there anything else?
That's the hardest thing, if I'm honest, because it's such a slow burn, and the progress is very, very, like, it likes to take its time, but it's the most rewarding, because every single little bit of progress I make that I'm still seeing to this day is me overcoming myself.
When you speak in high schools, what kind of approach do you take on in high school? For high school students as opposed to corporate?
It's different with every company, every high school, right? Because they'll have different needs, different goals, and different things they're working towards. Though quite often high school, it's about the mental health. It's about the resilience side of things. So they want me to share my story. And for young people, I'm so, so, so big on how we can look out for one another, keeping a supportive network around, you know, how we can reach out for support.
It takes a lot to try and reach out or even admit that you need help in the first place.
But it's literally half the battle,
yeah.
More than half the battle, because now you start tipping things over where what is troubling you, what is bothering you, no longer has power over you by causing you to close up and keep things in. That's more than half the battle. The last point that I'd really like to share with young people is to know that they have strengths and how they can use them in tough times. In our darkest days, we only see what's troubling us, what the challenge is, what's stressing us out. We forget that, hey, I'm a persistent person. Like, I'm stubborn as. I'm fairly patient. I'm logical. All these things. But no, when something comes up, it becomes our world. Reminding ourselves of who we really are, as in the accomplishments we've had in our past, but what it took to achieve those things, because we're all that deep down inside. With corporates, again, it's different with every session, that quite often I've been approached about how we can collaborate, how we can connect more meaningfully, but again, too, how we can have the mental strength and resilience to overcome stressful times, pressures put on us by, you know, corporate goals and all that stuff, and how we can increase our performance. They're the approaches I like to take, but almost every single corporate session, there's only like one that I can really point out where I haven't been asked this, is, Matt, what can I do to make sure that my kids don't end up in the similar position that you're in? And the thing about that is, deep down, look, we can talk about how strong like we can be, how resilient we can be, but the most meaningful part about all of this is our kids, the people we love, because at the end of the day, it comes down to what's meaningful. So they want to know how they can make sure the people that they love are strong, that they're supported, and that they know that they can go to them as well.
I mean, you must find the irony in the fact that there are people who are asking, what can we do to avoid this situation? But this situation was literally like the catalyst that helped you become a more confident person, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, people sometimes need to fall down to learn how to get back up. And we can't protect people, and not everywhere is a safe space, unfortunately. Support is out there, but and like you mentioned, right, that part, just reaching out for support and actually getting support, we need to be ready for it, because it's out there, it's available. We just need to be open to it, because people do care.
This is a very formal interview, clearly.
we've got some
circular saws going up there. We're outside.
Family picnic next door to us. Not necessarily. No, I think, look, the biggest message I want to share is, yeah, what that guy in the train just told me. What are you going to do about it now? Hey, you can't change your circumstances. It is what it is, where you're at now, but your outcomes, you dictate. So where are you going? What are you going to do? You know, quite often when I'm in the gym or I'm training or doing whatever, people will come up and say, oh, you know, Matt, you're so inspiring and all this stuff. And look, I appreciate it. But at the same time, the reason I know they're saying that, okay, again, assumption, but at the back of my mind, this is what I think is what they're saying, is that if they were in my shoes, they wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing now. They wouldn't be able to handle it as well as I'm handling it. And they mean good in what they're saying, and I appreciate that. But at the end of the day, they wouldn't be able to handle the same adversity in the same way. And so their way of saying it's so inspiring, yeah, I'm sure it does inspire them. But imagine if they were able to just see me or whoever in a wheelchair or not, doesn't matter. But because I don't see myself anyone different from anyone else in the gym. We're all working towards our goals. Mm. And those that are quote unquote more successful in life, they don't say I'm inspiring. They say push harder. Mm. Because they know themselves that they can push harder and that they do themselves. So they encourage me to be more. And I think if we came from that place, again, more peace, more joy, less expectation, less assumptions.
Have the Nerve is a podcast by Spinal Cord Injuries Australia. This episode has been written, edited, and produced by me, Susan Wood, and logo art by Kobe Ann Moore. This podcast would not be made possible without the funding of the Department of Social Services as part of our resource hub. You can visit our resource hub at scia.org.au to find out more information about your disability. Thank you for listening.